Please help me welcome our speaker tonight from Telford, PA, Mickey H. What's up, everybody? My name is Mickey. I'm an alcoholic. I'm very grateful, extremely grateful to be alive and sober and here with all of you tonight. Shay is not here, so Shay, thank you so much for calling and asking. I've never actually really been asked to speak here as a actual scheduled speaker. I'm always the last minute guy, so I guess this might be like COVID, bottom of the barrel. We need to get someone out that can fill the time. He doesn't shut up. So I got the phone call. So that's why I'm here. So you can get mad at her that you got to spend an hour of your time looking at this ugly fat face and listening to what I got to say. All right. So, but I'm really grateful to be alive and sober. This program is unbelievable. Feet First has a very, very large spot in my heart. I came into a meeting 3 days later. I came here for the first time because I actually wanted to. And this was my home group for about 4.5, 5 years. But AA gives you all these promises, and Monday nights just didn't work for me anymore. So to come up here is it's an absolute gift, and I'm extremely grateful. So Feet First home group members, thanks for keeping it tough. Thanks for everything you do. So yeah, man, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I'm gonna tell you something right now. I can sum this up in 30 seconds and we can all get out of here and go get ice cream if you want. All right? Cause I can tell you what it was like. It was a lot of fun in the beginning. All right? And then it was like medium fun with a little bit of problems. And then it was like a little bit of fun with medium problems. And then it was just a whole bunch of problems. All right? That's what it was like. That's what my story is like. I'm sure a lot of you can relate to that, but, you know, I have a sobriety date, September 17th, 2012. God willing, in September, I have 9 years, and that is by the grace of God. It has nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with all of you people in this room, this home group, my sponsor, and God. Now look, this is my experience, okay? I choose to call my higher power God. If you do not, that is cool. If it's a doorknob, awesome. I don't care what it is. But I was extremely broken and powerless when I came into this program. And I soon realized that I needed to depend on somebody else, and it's God. So without God, I would not be here, and I would not have the life that I do have. I do have a sponsor. You know, we joke about it in this program, like, does your sponsor know that he's your sponsor? Yeah, he knows I'm his sponsee, but I'm terrible, man. I could probably text him 5 times a day and call him 10 times a week, and it still wouldn't be good enough. But that's cool. I met a complete stranger that helped change my life back in 2012. So anyway, there's the formalities. They're out of the way. Look, I had a wonderful childhood. I got an older brother, a younger sister. My older brother doesn't drink. He's on another maintenance program, and the one thing I always tell him is when that stops working for you, when the pain gets tough, I hope you give me a call so that I can help you out. My younger sister does not suffer from this. Look, this is like, I like to call this Planet AA, right? It's a no judgment zone. Did you guys get that? Planet Fitness? Okay. I'll work on that, all right? But I cannot judge anybody. I have absolutely, positively no reason or no want to judge people. I'm just another alcoholic trying to get another day. All right? That's all I am. And what I will tell you about my parents is they are still married. They are wonderful, wonderful people. They broke their backs to give me the life that they felt was appropriate as a kid. But my parents suffer from addiction problems, and I do not have the right to call them alcoholics. Just like I wouldn't call any of you drug addict or alcoholics. That's a decision you need to make for yourself. But my parents have addiction problems. And when I was growing up, I was surrounded by alcohol my entire life. My father immigrated from Ireland when he was 5 years old. And he had five brothers, and I lost three of them as a direct result of this disease. His father I lost as a direct result of this disease. But I will not stand up here and tell you that because my dad's from Ireland, where the land of alcoholism was born, that that's why I'm an alcoholic. Absolutely not. It just makes my story sound a little bit better. I don't speak in a brogue. My father doesn't speak in a brogue, but my dad's from Ireland. All right. It makes my story sound a little better. My mom has one sister. She had six brothers, and five of them and her father all died as a direct result of this disease. Okay. Both my parents come from two large families. There was parties and events every single, it felt like as a kid, every single weekend. And they all started the same way. My mom's family lived in Haverhill. My dad's family was living in New York. And we would go there for family get-togethers, and everyone's happy, they're loving, they're kissing. Everyone's laughing, having a great time. And then like 2 hours later, Uncle Mark gets caught doing something in the bathroom. An hour after that, Uncle Michael's drunk and he's falling over everything. Plates are getting thrown, fights are happening, and then we're gone, right? Like, and no, you're a kid. You don't want to leave. You're playing with all your cousins, right? I mean, I have like 27 first cousins on my mom's side. It's ridiculous. But you don't want to leave, but we had to leave. It got to that point, right? And the only thing that was ever said in the 30-minute ride home from Haverhill to Chalfont was, oh man, it's really a shame that, like, you know, that the family was fighting tonight. No negative consequences, no repercussions of, you know, the drugs and alcohol that were being done. Nothing. Everything got swept under the carpet. And let me tell you something. That's what happened in my life with my parents. Everything got swept under the carpet. Nobody wants to admit anything. Denial is a pain in the rear end, man. And I suffered from it. Lots of my family suffered from it. And but that's what it was like as a kid. My parents drank on a daily basis. My father is going to be 80 in November. You do not want to be around my father from 3:30 to 5 o'clock on a daily basis. You do not want to be around him. Because I guess it's okay, because it's 5 o'clock somewhere, that's the time that's all right for him to start drinking, right? He is a different person, and it's a shame to watch that happen, because I get to sit here on a daily basis because of this program and see what happens. But at 5 o'clock comes around, he breaks out the scotch. My mom has a gin and tonic, and they're completely different people. But that is how I grew up. Every single day, every single weekend, alcohol was around 24/7 and never any repercussions. And then the crazy part about it growing up too is my mom's only sister, God willing, in September, she will have 34 years in Alcoholics Anonymous. So you have the polar opposites, right? Sitting in my mom's family, and nothing was ever discussed. So listen, I was given every opportunity as a kid. I was never homeless. There was never not any food on the table. We always had everything. We didn't go out to eat all the time. We didn't go on extravagant vacations, but I never had to worry about my basic needs. And until I became a parent, did I realize how difficult that actually was, right? And then when you're stuck in an addiction, and an active addiction that's nasty, like, I'm not saying that my kids starved at all, but I would have definitely chosen alcohol over groceries. No doubt. 100%. But that's what my parents did. They gave us this wonderful life. I was never deprived of anything. It was wonderful. And, you know, and then I turned 16, and I thought I was young when I picked up the first drink and drug until I came into these rooms and met all of you and realized that I was a late bloomer to this. But the really cool part about me is my alcoholism took off. Okay, I went up to visit my brother at Kutztown University. My brother was like Dean's List, like straight A's in high school, like never did anything wrong. Mom and Dad loved him. He was dating my best friend's older sister. Like, yeah, let Mickey and Johnny go up to Kutztown and see him. No problem. I was literally there for 10 minutes. They're like, hey, you want a drink? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, and he was like, dude, do you want a drink? And I'm like, dude, you drink? And he's like, of course I do. And I was like, Mom and Dad don't know. He's like, yeah, no kidding, dude. So I went to my first college party. And the best part about it, and the only reason I'm going to tell you this story is because my first drink was Mickey's Wide Mouth Malt Liquor. Dude, it had my name on it. So I went from drinking little jugs, you know, it was just sugar water that was colored, right, in a little plastic jug, to now Mickey's Wide Mouth Malt Liquor that was in the same thing, and it had my name on it. And I took a sip of that, man. My experience that night was, wow, this is awesome. Now look, I probably don't need this microphone. I'm really loud. I'm really happy. Like, and I'm really positive. But dude, you put some alcohol in me, man. I mean, I am off to the races. I am not a hater. I am a lover. As a matter of fact, it's kind of disgusting. Okay? I earned a nickname in my active addiction. All right? They call me Sweaty Polar Bear. Because that's what they say I look like when I'm coming at you when I'm drinking and drunk, okay? Just imagine a polar bear sweating, running after you, claws up in the air, trying to hug you. And that's what I do. I try and hug you and lick you and kiss you and tell you how we're going to be best friends for the rest of our life. And on top of it, I am dripping wet with sweat, right? Like, and it's fun in the beginning. Like I said to you, four things, right? When it started, it was fun. Well, that's how my night would be. Because in the beginning, it's cool to have Mickey around. Mickey's fun. He makes fun of himself. He does stupid, crazy things. Like, we want somebody to jump off the garage roof into the pool. Mickey will do it first, and then we'll see if we're going to die. Right? Like, that's what I did. I was always for it. But the problem is then I become a liability. Right? Because then you don't know what I'm going to do. Because on top of it, I'm a blackout drunk. And it takes zero time. And especially considering that I love Jack Daniels. So, like, I always had a bottle of Jack Daniels, and I always had my Budweiser, and, you know, I'm blacking out. And it's, you know, I mean, God bless the fact that social media was not big when I was in active addiction, because it'd be really embarrassing. The pictures of me now are embarrassing, let alone what it was like then. But by the end of the night, I'm that guy that's flipping over couches. I'm that guy that's running out in the middle of the street with road hazard cones thrown at cars thinking it's funny. Like, that's me. I'm a liability. So to be asked to come up here and speak right now, to actually have people call me, to have people that want to be around me, is an absolute blessing. Because at the end of my 22-year run, I was an absolute liability. But that's what it was like. I mean, I could sit here and tell you war stories all night long, but we've all got them and they're all different, you know? And that's how my alcoholism went. I went from visiting my brother, like, once a month for the first 3 months to, like, okay, this is not enough, okay? I need to find people that are doing exactly what I do when I want to do it. And I found them. It took zero time for me to find those people. And I spent my 3 years in high school completely inebriated in one form or another. It was not uncommon for me to be sitting in class, skip my next class, to go drink and do other substances and then go back to school. It wasn't uncommon for me to drink a whole bottle of Jack Daniels after school before I had to play a soccer game at night in the stadium under the lights with my family and friends around. Like, I didn't care. And I didn't understand that, like, you know, that whole, I don't have a choice over this and, like, I have no idea. Like, I didn't care. You offered me something, I took it, and I didn't care what I had to do. Who did I have to manipulate? Who did I have to lie to? Who did I have to cheat? Who did I have to destroy? It didn't matter. And I didn't understand that. So, like, we talk about in this program, like, taking hostages, right? Well, I had my mom and dad. They were my first two hostages. My dad was a self-employed painting contractor, and I worked for him. And I manipulated, stole, cheated, did everything to my father, because I knew he was never going to fire me. I was his best employee. And, like, I guess the only good thing about my alcoholism was I didn't get hangovers. So, like, don't get me wrong. I would like to take a nap the next day. That would be pretty sweet, right? But I didn't get headaches. I didn't feel like crap. I could eat right away, and I could go to work and perform the way my father wanted. But the problem was is my parents had, like, stipulations. Like, okay, you're going out tonight. Your curfew's 11 o'clock. Well, I just graduated high school. There's no reason why I should have an 11 o'clock curfew. But that didn't matter. You know, okay, whatever, I'll be home at 11. I would come home between like 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, completely blacked out, to my mom at the top of the stairs crying and then screaming at me. My father saying, babe, let him go to bed. He's got to wake up and go to work. We'll talk about it after work tomorrow. I would come home from work, we would talk about it, and I'd go right back out and do the exact same thing every single night of my summer, Friday nights, Saturday nights. Like, I wasn't one of those cool kids that got to, like, go away on spring break and, like, when you had time off of school for, like, parent-teacher conferences or whatever it was. No, I went to work with my father, right? But who's going to go to work sober? Like, why would I do something like that? That's ridiculous, dude. He makes me listen to 98.1. I'm not going there sober. Like, I need something. I did what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it, no matter who I destroyed. And that went on forever. And it was very difficult for me when I came in this program to admit to my mom how I was killing her. Like, I can't ever give back that time. I can't ever give back the fact that my mom was a respiratory therapist for the majority of her working life and was called into the ER at Grandview to trach people from DUI accidents, okay? To trach people that fell while they were drunk and then watch them die. We're there for them to die. My mom was waiting for those phone calls. Waiting for those phone calls from me. But I didn't care. Yeah, yeah, whatever. I'll be home at 11 o'clock. And I never did it. I mean, I can never, ever give that time back. What I was taught in this program, though, is that one day at a time, I can call my mom. I can check in with her and let her know I'm okay. You know, and one day at a time, I can possibly give her back a little bit of peace and serenity that she doesn't have to worry about me anymore. But this is what I did. And I didn't know I was doing it. I mean, I consciously knew that, well, I was blacked out. I knew that I wasn't going to make my curfew, right? But I didn't care because I wanted to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And I did what every great alcoholic does. I went to college and I majored in alcoholism and it was phenomenal. I did so great at it that my first semester I got a 0-0. And that was a great conversation to have when the grades came in, right? But I went back for my second semester. I did a lot better. Don't worry about it. I did better. 2-0. That was pretty cool. And then for some reason, they let me go back my third semester. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because, like, this is why it doesn't matter. Like, I work for my father. I mean, they were like, all the money, you're living off campus. So all the money you make working during the summer is going to be for, like, your books and your food and your CDs and your Legos, you know, because that's what I tell my parents I do, right? I was 5 weeks into my third semester. I had spent every dollar I had. I didn't have books. I hadn't been to class. And we were being evicted from our apartment because we got caught having a keg party. Like, that's what I did. So I was like, all right, this is cool, right? This isn't for me right now. My parents are paying. I'm going to do something responsible. And I came home and I said, I have a drinking problem. And they were like, yeah, no kidding, right? But I was like, listen, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I gotta come up with a different plan. So my plan was to work for my father, making $442 a week. I'm a numbers guy. So like I did the math and I was like, okay, I'll be a millionaire by the time I'm 52. Like, this is going to be awesome, right? Well, that was 1996 when I came home. And in 1997, I had no money. I did have a vehicle. But I got my first DUI, right? So there's no money. There's no big extravagant plan. Like, I'm not retiring anytime. Like, my alcoholism and drug addiction took over, and I got my first DUI in 97. I got my second DUI in 99. I got my third DUI in 2004. And the really cool part about my third DUI in 2004 was it was April. It was actually Good Friday. It was my mom's birthday. It's a really cool, like, awesome thing. Is this how you celebrate your mom's birthday and Good Friday for Easter? That February, they changed the DUI law. And I went from serving a 30 to 90 day to serving a 1 to 2. And so I did what every great alcoholic does, and I tried to find a way out of going to jail. So I tried to recruit in the Army, and they were like, no way. Montgomery County was not letting me go anywhere. Dude, I was a cash cow for them, right? And then on top of it, I requested work release. So, like, I'm a bigger cash cow now for them. And they're like, yeah, you are not going into the Army. I got sentenced to a 1 to 2. And my lawyer, who I thought was like this incredible person on the planet, right? Like, I can trust this guy. He's a high profile, you know, lawyer. So he tells me three things. He tells me, you're doing 365 days, no more, no less. You're going to get good time. And after a year, that's going to cut off like almost a full month of your jail bid. And I was like, awesome. He's like, and then on top of it, after you're there for a little bit and you're a good boy, you're going to get weekend furloughs. I'm like, dude, this is like a country club. Awesome, right? Like, I can do this. So I went to court a week before Thanksgiving, and I had to be a self-committal, and they gave me a two-week period from December 20th until January 3rd. So I figured, what an incredible Christmas present. I'm going to go into jail on December 23rd. I'll get out of jail next year. Like, what a great Christmas present, right? Because I know what's best, dude. Like, I'm on top of this. And so I went into jail, and the first hour I was there, I found out I'm serving a 1 to 2, and there's no chance I'm getting out in 365 days. Okay, so great. I'm in jail for two Christmases. There's no such thing as good time for misdemeanors. So if any criminals out there, if anyone tells you you get good time for misdemeanors, it's not true. There's no such thing. And on top of it, I got the only judge in Montgomery County that does not give you weekend furloughs. So I was like, okay, so I was super excited to go to jail. Like, all these things were going to happen, right? Like, jail's not going to be bad, right? And it was all squashed in the first hour. So I got on work release, and what I witnessed for 11 days on work release was people going out. They were releasing you to the world to smoke and do whatever you wanted, and they were all coming back drunk. And they're falling over the tables, they're dropping their chairs, their trays, and I was like, wow, I can do this. You're going to let me out. I'm going to be able to go to work. I'm going to be able to smoke as many cigarettes as I want. And I'm going to be able to drink. Like, this is awesome. So I finally get out to work. And I went to a third shift bar. Started drinking. First day out. I am in jail for a third DUI. Serving a 1 to 2. I don't think I have a problem. I'm just unlucky. And now I'm drinking. And who goes back to jail? So I'm drinking before work, and then I'm drinking after work, and I'm getting back on the bus and the train to get back there drunk. And then I got caught. And that was like the worst thing ever for me. Because now I'm like, you know, I'm going to have to serve the full 2 years. Like, this is ridiculous. Who in the right mind, you know, is going to let me continue to go out to work? Well, God intervened in my life. It was not the first time, and I got to stay on work release. So, out of respect for AA, yes, drugs are a huge part of my story, but I need to tell you this because step two talks about came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I need for you to feel and understand the insanity that was going on in my brain, that I thought it was okay. What I did then was I found another substance that didn't turn my eyes red and didn't smell. And I would do this substance less than a mile away from the jail at a Sunoco. Have you ever been to Eagleville? I was in Montgomery County's finest hotel. There's a Sunoco less than a mile from there. And I sat in that parking lot for months doing other substances because who goes back to jail sober? Like, you let me out in the free world. Who's going to do this? And I thought this was okay. Like, I truly thought this was okay. This is what my disease tells me. So I'm going to do whatever I want, whenever I want, no matter who I got to run over. And by the way, when you're in jail, just go ahead and do whatever you want. All right. So I told you about how I took my first hostages were my mom and dad. Well, I was dating this girl at this time. We ended up getting married. We're still married today. But during that 14 months that I was in there on work release, nobody sacrificed more than this woman. She would get up at 5:30 in the morning to get ready for work. She would come pick me up. She would drive me to work. She would then go to work for 10 hours. She would come get me. She would drive me back to jail. And we did this for basically 14 months. And I got out. Now I'm a multiple DUI offender. So if you don't know, your license gets suspended. You get a breathalyzer system. I'm on parole. I'm on probation. That was in 2008 when it was all said and done and over with. And I spent from 2008 to 2012 convincing my mother and my wife that they would never have to worry about this again. Now, not only did I take her hostage, but I tortured this woman. I mean, I gave her more reasons than she needed to leave me. And she did it. And I truly believe that that is God. All right? I truly believe, because there is no person in their right mind that would stick around and deal with what I was doing. I mean, this is what she had to deal with on a daily basis from her husband. We had two kids. She's working at Grandview Hospital. The children's center is right next door to her office. So she would go to work for 10 hours. She would bring the kids, go to work for 10 hours, get the kids, bring them home. And mind you, she would be home at like 6:20 every night. So I would be at the bar at 4 o'clock. I would be blacked out, or at least on my way to blacking out. I would leave the bar, like, not a responsible alcoholic. Like, why don't you leave at 5:30 so that you don't have to speed home and, like, maybe you'd have some time to do something, right? No. I would leave at, like, 6:05. I'd speed home. I'd pull a beer out. I'd put it on the counter. I'd pour a glass of wine, and I'd go up and get in the shower. So if she got home and smelled alcohol on me, she would see what I had out. And what an awesome husband I am. I got you a drink too, right? Like, dude, look at this. I'm awesome. We would do dinner. She'd be like, okay, I'm going to go upstairs. I'm going to bathe the kids, and then we'll put them to bed. And I'd be like, all right, well, I'm going to go downstairs. I'm going to catch a smoke, and then I'll be up. And 2 hours later, I would come back upstairs. Everyone's in bed. I'd be like, babe, what happened? And she'd be like, dude, you've been gone for 2 hours. You've been gone for 2 hours. And I did this. Every day. Well, Monday through Thursday, because she was off on Fridays, because she worked tens. I hated Fridays, man. Hated them. But that's what I did. So I did the same thing to my mom and dad. Had no idea I'm doing the same thing to my wife. Because I didn't care. That's what my disease told me, that it was okay. That was the insanity of what went on. So for 3 years, I tried to convince them they had nothing to worry about. And I thought I was a really good drunk driver at that point, basically. You know, like, you know, I'm a DUI offender. So I would go to the bar, I would order two drinks, I would chug them both. So I would get a shot of Jack Daniels and a Budweiser. I would drink them both in 10 minutes, set an alarm for an hour, because I knew that if I got pulled over, that any cop was going to make me, I was getting a breathalyzer, roadside sobriety test, because no one's going to look at my record and not do that. And I knew that one of them would be out of my system by then. But that was the longest hour of my life, sitting there waiting so that I could leave and get home to do what I wanted to do. And you know what? It took zero time before I'm like, this is not working. I'm just going to do it at home. And this is what I did. For 3 years, I lied. I manipulated. I mean, like, I would make money and it would go out. And Valerie would be like, where's your pay for this week? I'd be like, I don't know. I spent it. And like I didn't care. We got two kids. Like I didn't care. Cause like, this is what I thought was okay. And, September 16th, 2012, I got my fourth DUI. Yep. I'm that guy that you read about. I'm that guy that you know. So for all of you that don't have DUIs, I took care of it for you. Okay. We're good. What I can tell you, September 16th, 2012 was a gorgeous sunny Sunday. And, I had a soccer game. At 9 o'clock in the morning, I was at the bar at 11. I was at the bar like 11:30. I was blacked out by 1 o'clock, and at 3:30. Now I live at the time. Not at the time. We still live in the same house in Telford. But I was in Chalfont, and I left at 3:30 because I needed to be at Philadelphia International Airport at 4:05. I needed to be at baggage claim, and you cannot get from Chalfont, Pennsylvania to Philadelphia International Airport in 35 minutes. It's not happening, okay? Let alone I'm blacked out, okay? So, like, who knows what way I was going? Who knows the millions of people that I am still putting at risk on a daily basis, right? Because I'm like, I don't know about you guys. I had a lot of foxhole prayers. And my foxhole prayers were never for the other people on the road. Like, God, please look out for them because I'm an asshole. No, my foxhole prayers were, dude, let me get home tonight. I will never do this again, right? If I'm a four-time DUI offender, I'm a blackout drunk. Who knows how many times I'm going to do this? So anyway, I got pulled over for speeding, and I got arrested for my fourth DUI. And at 4:05, I kid you not, it's a program of honesty, my phone rang, and it was my wife. And the police officer says, do you want me to answer this? And I'm like, yeah, you need to tell her what's going on. Conversation went something like this, because I could only hear one side of it. No, Mrs. Hurley, this is not your husband. This is Officer Keeble. Your husband's being arrested for a DUI. You need to find your own way home from the airport. And he hung up on her. So, yes, couple sighs. Yeah, you should feel for this woman. You should pray for her tonight because she is an angel, all right? But all those sighs and all those gasps and all of that, what I can sit up here and tell you right now was the best day of my life. What I can sit up here and tell you right now was the most freedom I'd ever felt in my life. My 22-year run was over. I was a drug addict alcoholic. I was. And there was nowhere else to go. I'm sitting in a jail, in a police station, being, you know, processed for a DUI as my wife is waiting for me to pick her up at baggage claim. I hadn't even seen her for 10 days. Like, that's what my disease told me was okay to do. Go play this soccer game. Get drunk. It's cool, dude. And apparently, because I was blacked out, what I heard was I was telling everyone at the bar that I had purchased a limo service to pick my family up from the airport, right? And, like, I mean, this is ridiculous. It's complete insanity. But that was the best day of my life. The absolute best day of my life. So the cops thought I was too drunk, and that I didn't know anything about my life or my history or anything. Because of statute of limitations and the 10-year expungement, they thought it was only my second DUI. And I was like, no. You know, I kind of got one in July of 97, November of 99, April of 04, and now September of 2012. Like, I kind of know this. And they're like, yeah, I don't think you really know what you're talking about right now. You might not want to admit to this. And I'm like, well, okay. Well, you can get it. You can call for a ride home. Well, I'm not calling my wife, right? I'm not calling my parents, you know. So I do the next best thing, and I call my neighbor, who I used to drink at that bar with, and then leave at 6:15, right? And they allowed me to wait for him to come pick me up, and I got down on my knees, and I prayed. And I said, God, I'm an alcoholic. I need some help. And it was the best day of my life. Now, the really cool part about God, and like I said, this is my experience, is my father is a former priest. He left the priesthood, became an ordained minister, married my mom, had kids. I'm a result of that. And we were not a religious family, but my dad was a very spiritual man. And we would have these really long conversations every once in a while. My father used to sit in the woods at Tyler State Park with a tree that was cut down like an altar and preach to these people. And like, meanwhile, I'm like playing army guys off in the side, but like, this is what my dad did. Like, he preached to people, and like, and he always told people, don't take what I say to you as like the end all be all. What does it mean to you? How does it make you feel? Like, what's up? Like, so I always had that spiritual side. I just didn't know about it. And I never wanted to tap into it because I didn't have a problem. I wasn't an alcoholic addict. Like, I was just unlucky. So I got on my knees and I prayed. And the funny part was I forced that guy that picked me up to drop me back off at my car so I could drive it home. I just got arrested for my fourth DUI, and I forced him to, and he's like, dude, I am not doing this. And I'm like, yes, you are, or I'm going to jump out of your car while it's driving. Do you want that on your conscience? It's like, dude, like, I mean, how selfish do you have to be? Like, how egotistical? But he dropped me off of my car. And the only reason I wanted him to is because I was going to kill myself. I figured in my V8 Expedition, I could get fast enough on 309 that I could pop over in front of an 18-wheeler. That was my genius idea. Like, I'm not going to put my wife through this anymore. I'm not going to put my kids through this anymore. Right? But I told you, I got down on my knees and I told God I'm an alcoholic and I need some help. So I got in that car and I cried the whole way home. I cried the whole way home. Now, I didn't go into meetings right away because I'm a really good alcoholic. I know what's best for me, right? Like, so like, my best thinking's now got me a fourth DUI. I'm going back to jail again. Like, you know, I mean, in the end all be all, I think it was like my wife and I tried one night to figure out how much we spent. It was somewhere around like $55,000 from 97 to 2012. Well, when I got out of jail in 2013, you know, but I was like, I need to work because I gotta make enough money for my wife so that when I go back to jail, she doesn't lose the house, the car, you know, and nothing happens, right? Like, I'm trying to take responsibility for my actions. And 30 days later, I was in worse shape than I had ever been. And I hadn't had a drink or a drug in 30 days. And I called my wife up. My wife is really good with a computer. I'm not. I called her up on the phone. I'm like, babe, I need help. I need a meeting. 5 seconds later, she's like, Mickey, I got great news for you. And I was like, yeah, what's that? She's like, there's a meeting tomorrow night, less than an hour from our house. So when you lose your license, you can walk to that meeting because I am not driving you. And I was like, well, that's great. I don't care about me walking. I need to go to a meeting. And that Friday night, I walked into Indian Valley Group of AA in Telford, PA. And it changed my life. Changed my life. It was a Friday night. It's kind of like a similar setup here to West Swamp. There's a little hallway with a bunch of double doors. And when I walked in that first set, I heard laughter. And I was like, wow, maybe this is like a good place, right? And I got up to the second set of doors and there's like 40 to 50 people in there, man, drinking coffee, eating donuts, having fun, laughing, right? They're happy, joyous and free. I'm angry, pissed off and scared. So I got to that door. My best alcoholic mind said, okay, you got to lie about something. And the only lie that came to my head was to ask, is this not the Boy Scout meeting? I am not lying to you. It was the only lie I could come to in my head. And I was too embarrassed to say it. So I just walked in. And this is my experience. What I remember, it was like a needle scratching. And everyone got quiet. And everyone turned around, man. They smelt blood in the water. They saw how sick and suffering I was. And I was met with hugs and handshakes and things like, you don't have to continue to live this way. You don't have to continue to die. There is a way out if you would like it. And that's how I was met that first Friday night. And I went outside that meeting and had my first spiritual experience that I can remember that, you know, besides all the other times that God intervened. And I was talking to the man that soon became my sponsor. And my first spiritual experience was humility. Because we sat outside and he said, look, dude, did anything ever stop you from drinking or drugging? And I was like, he's like, did weather ever stop you? Did money, a car? No, nothing ever stopped me. We're really good at that. We're really good at getting what we want whenever we want it. No matter if we don't have a car, gas, food, money, whatever it may be, we get what we want. And I was like, absolutely not. And he's like, well, are you willing to do anything for your recovery? Well, this guy's, he's happy, joyous, and free. I'm angry, pissed off, and scared. We have nothing in common. It looks like he doesn't shower. He's wearing camo clothes, right? Like, we have nothing in common. Nothing. Besides alcoholism and soccer, after I got to know him, that was it. We had nothing else in common. But he was happy, and I wasn't. And I said, absolutely, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. He said, well, you need to stop lying. And I said, dude, I'm a good person, dude. I don't lie to anybody. And he's like, you're already lying to me. Humility smacked me right in the face. Now, a lot of you know my sponsor. He's a home group member here, Tree Rich, Rich K, whatever, however you know him. He is not a soft, cuddly man. All right? And God put him in my life because that's what I needed. And he was not soft with me whatsoever. Okay? Like a really good alcoholic, I fought him all the time. I would say things all the time like, I know, I know, I know, I know. And he'd be like, that's the mating call of the moron. Okay? So shut up and listen to me. Because you don't know anything. I'm like, Rich, trust me, I got 3 DUIs. He's like, yeah, so do I. And I'm like, dude, trust me. I know, I know. I mean, and he threw it in my face. And he doesn't throw it in your face like happy, joyous, and free. Like he's angry and yelling at me. But this guy had what I wanted. So I was willing to do whatever it took. To a point. Like situations like when we're sitting in my basement. Because look, I don't want to screw up these 12 steps. I have been court ordered to do AA for years. Okay, I'm a four-time DUI offender. AA and meetings are not new to me. But I went late. I sat in the back of the room. And I got the heck out of there. And on top of it, this same hostage. Like, don't tell me that this is not insanity. The same hostage, the girl I'm dating, I tell her, do not come pick me up from this AA meeting tonight without a cooler and 2 Budweisers in it. She'd be like, okay. And she would show up so that I could have two Budweisers on the way home from the meeting to our apartment. Now, the funny part about that story is our apartment was 4 minutes away, right? But that's what I needed. That's what I wanted. That's what my best thinking. That's what this disease does. So anyway, I didn't want to screw this program up. And Rich is like, Nikki, what's the most important thing in your life? Boom, I got this. My wife and kids. We're in my house, in my basement, reading this work. And he's like, dude, that's the funniest thing I ever heard. And started laughing. Deep belly laugh. Not like this little giggle that all of you are doing with my bad jokes tonight. Big, deep belly laugh. In my house, to my face, telling me that my wife and kids are not the most important thing. And he says, your recovery is. And you're going to continue to die until you understand that. I'm like, I do what every good new sponsee does, and I kick him out of my house. I tell him I'm not feeling well. I'm tired. We'll get together tomorrow. Kick him out. I go upstairs, and I tell my wife. Because, like, my wife's on my side, right? And my wife turns to me and says, maybe he's right. And I got a chill up and down my back. And that night, I knew that I had the right man. I knew that I was going to be safe. I knew everything was going to be all right because this guy had what I wanted. And my wife is agreeing with this, okay? But it's true. He also told me that first night that I met him that I'm not special. And he didn't say it in that fashion, but I'll keep it clean. And I didn't know what he meant by that either. But what he meant was, dude, there's nothing you can do about what happened yesterday, last night, or even this morning. You can't. You are not special to change that. And you're certainly not special enough to control what's going to happen tomorrow. So why don't you just be grateful and live in today? How about you try and do something different than what you've always tried to do, which is to control, manipulate, steal, lie, everything. Like, why don't you try something different and just live in today? You know, so that's what I did. And I made recovery the most important thing in my life. I'm going to tell you, this is a program of honesty. Some of the biggest fights my wife and I have ever gotten into is over recovery. I've left my daughter's birthday party to go do a commitment. I have walked out on family Thanksgiving dinners to go help out I thought would be a future sponsee. You know, it didn't work out, but he needed help. That's what I was told. To make recovery the most important thing in my life. Because without recovery, I don't have my wife. I don't have my kids. I don't have anything that is enjoyable at all. I don't care about the materialistic things. That was the other thing when I came in this program. If you would have told me that the AA promises are like serenity and peace and ease and you can go to sleep at night and not wake up worrying about who you lied to and who you didn't, like, I'm out. No way. I need something cool. Right? But you can't put a price tag on serenity. You can't put a price tag on the fact that when I put my head down at night, that I knew I did my best. I know that I was being of service, and I know that God willing, if I get a chance to wake up tomorrow, I'm going to try and do it again. Because there's millions and millions of people out there that are sick and suffering as I am that need somebody to put recovery first to help them out. And that's how I live my life now. So that's what happened. I went back to jail a day after my 6 month anniversary. I had a soft cover big book in my hand and the clothes on my back. Jail was nothing that time. I said, I don't know, you guys watch shows, you know, that got like jails in it. It's not cool to like hold hands in jail, right? Cause you're not with girls in there. I'm with guys, but I'm doing meetings and I'm holding hands with guys in jail cause I don't care. Dude, remember it's Planet AA. It's a no judgment zone. If you got time to judge me, good for you. Take my inventory cause I can't even take it. All right? I was completely powerless. I needed to find a power greater than myself. And I found that power in God. And on a daily basis, He removes all that stuff from me so that I can go out and be of service. People laugh at me all the time. You know? Like, I'm throwing money here. I'm doing this. I'm paying this bill for this person. I'm picking this person up for work. You know? I don't want your money. Dude, just let me give you money. It's not even my money. It's God's money. I'm just borrowing it to help you out. See, that's another really cool part about being a service in AA, right? Because I lost my driver's license for a really long time, man. People, I didn't humble myself and call them to come pick me up for meetings. I would try and give them money, and they'd be like, absolutely not. I'd be like, why not? Let me help you. I want to help you. They're like, dude, help somebody else out when you have that opportunity. Pass on what was so freely given to you. Don't worry about it now. I'm just doing what was so freely given to me. And I'll tell you, I've lived my life pretty much for these, you know, almost 9 years, putting recovery first, putting somebody else in front of me, not being selfish, self-centered, egotistical, manipulative, you know, a lying, cheating, stealing, pain in the rear end. Why don't you think about somebody else besides yourself? And that's what I do. That's what gets me through. Now look, this is my experience, and I'm not telling you people that if you don't walk out on your daughter's birthday party to go help speak at Penn Foundation that you're wrong and like, and you're going to go back out. No, this is just what I need. I'm psychotic. I'm an alcoholic to the fullest extent. Okay. I do everything alcoholically. All right. I mean, you should see the seltzer that's in my house right now. I mean, I got at least 8 different brands. We do taste tests with different flavors. Like, I don't do it small. Okay. I don't. Okay. You tell me that I got a day off. No, I'm going to fill that day off in the next 5 minutes. Okay. I don't care. That's what's going to happen. I need to be of service. That's how I live happy, joyous, and free. I got friends now that I never, ever would have thought I'd ever have. And I'll tell you, I would bend over backwards for them. And I know deep in their heart they would do the same for me. And it has nothing to do with the fact that I'm, you know, this sweaty polar bear that they just don't want. Like, they're scared that I'll come attack them because they said no. Like, they do these things with a pure heart and honest motives, right? You know, I mean, I didn't really understand when Rich told me early on, you know, that I was egotistical, manipulative, self, you know, self-centered and all that. Like, I was like, dude, I'm a people person, man. I'll give you the shirt off my back if you're cold, man. You know? Now, granted, you don't want my shirt because it's soaking wet and sweat, but I'll give it to you, right? I mean, I will do this. Whatever you want, just ask. But I always had hidden agendas. My motives were never pure. And like I said, one day at a time, you know, if I get that opportunity, man, I'm going to pay it back. You know, I was also told, and it says in our literature, that we don't have a cure, right? We don't have a cure. We have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition, okay? So for me, that means I pray first thing in the morning. That means that I'm calling an alcoholic. That means that I'm trying to go to a meeting. That means that I'm praying last thing at night, okay? Nothing comes in between that, okay? Nothing. If I do not hit my knees first thing in the morning, something is going to go awry. It is. And whose fault is it? It's mine, which is awesome because now I accept responsibility for my actions. And now, like, I truly am like kind of like a people person because I am aware of how my actions affect other people. And you know what? If I'm not doing those 4 things in the morning, there's a chance that something's going to come out of my mouth that I don't want to. But that's what I got to do. I got a daily reprieve. Just like Rich said, you're not special. Live in today. You're lucky enough just to wake up and be alive today. I mean, how many people in this room have lost a family member or a best friend as a direct result of this disease? I bet you it's a lot. Right? Like, this is life or death. Yeah, I got wonderful things to look forward to, and I got vacations and this and that and like all these things, but I don't have that if I don't have today. Because if I pick up a drink, you might as well call the cops, okay? Because I am going to put so many people in jeopardy. You know, and like, I'm sure like a lot of you get those people in your life that are like, dude, you think like you're really done drinking the rest of your life? I'm like, well, I don't really feel like going back to jail. Like, how about that? You know, and people talk about gratitude, right? I love gratitude. I love it. You know, like things aren't working out. Like 8 things that could have went wrong today all went wrong. For me, it's easy. I'm not in jail with a 2-inch toothbrush that chokes and gags me when I'm trying to get my back molars. I actually have a bed and a pillow and a blanket that doesn't have holes on it. Okay? The tomatoes that I put on top of my sandwich don't disintegrate when I touch them. It's really easy for me to have gratitude because that's what my disease does to me. That's what tells me is okay. You can lie, cheat, manipulate, steal, do whatever you want to anyone just so that you can drink and get high. That's go right ahead. That's what my disease tells me. And on a daily basis, I realize that it doesn't get any more selfish than that. You know, I do a lot of service work. probably a lot more than my wife would like, probably a lot more than my friends would like, you know. But I'll tell you something. Walking into, I do a lot of it at Penn Foundation. I'm not trying to like promote Penn Foundation or whatnot. It's just where I am, okay? But I get to go in there. There's a lot of people, a lot of sick and suffering people hurting, right? And I get to go in there and I get to tell them things like, we have a daily reprieve. And I tell them, give them the same spiel I just gave you. I said, how many of you have been in this program and you don't do this work because the word God is written up there? Well, it's written in our 12 steps four times, twice, right after it says, as you understand it. Okay? Bill and Bob wrote this thing in 1939. And these guys were that smart to put lines like that in there. And if God's going to be the reason you're not having a spiritual experience like I am, then I'm going to pray for you. Because it doesn't need to be God. We're not a religious cult. I'll say we're a spiritual cult, absolutely. I don't know how many people get on their knees and pray first thing in the morning, last thing at night. Dude, I prayed in hotels of New York cities. I prayed on my knees in some dirty ass bathrooms. Some dirty bathrooms. I mean, I was doing a lot of things in those same bathrooms before too. But I'm on my knees praying in there now, asking for help. Because that's what I was told works. But I get to see these guys in Penn Foundation and tell them, look, you don't make recovery the most important thing in your life. You are going to be back here. You're going to be on that hamster wheel. Your one day, your 30 days means nothing. My 8.5 years doesn't mean anything more than yours. We have today to be of service, to wake up. I mean, God willing, I get to wake up in the morning. I got a chance to not be a menace to society anymore. I got a chance to be of service and to help people out. And that doesn't mean an alcoholic, right? Maybe I let somebody in on the highway, you know? Maybe I don't ride up on their ass and honk my horn and yell at them because they're trying to merge. What is that going to do for me? And if I'm in a rush, guess whose problem that is? Mine. Maybe I should have left 5 minutes earlier. Maybe I shouldn't have been playing solitaire for 10 minutes at my kitchen counter in the morning, right? Maybe. Or maybe I don't hit the snooze button twice. Just hit it once. Okay? But that's the thing. I got no idea what anyone else is, what's happening in anyone else's life. Maybe that person merging in is trying to get to their grandmother that just fell and broke her hip. I don't know. I would be doing the same thing, right? I have no idea what's going on. Planet AA. I have no right to judge anybody. I have no idea what they're going through. What I can do is I can control me. And I can be aware of how my actions affect other people. And if I do that in a positive manner on a daily basis, guess what? I got a fighting chance to keep coming back. Listen, I will continue to clean house. I will continue to trust God and I will continue to help others because I have one heck of an awesome life right now. I got incredible friends, family. My life is unbelievable. I don't have the materialistic things. I got serenity, peace, and ease. And if you're not having that experience, then you need to stick your hand out and ask someone for help. Because I am a miracle to this program. All of you in here are miracles. And we can all share in this together. One day at a time, I'll keep coming back. My name's Mickey. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks for letting me share.